When times were good, which is to say, when most everyone was working, California voted for the Global Warming Act, which demands a reduction in the state's emission of carbon dioxide by up to 30% beginning in 2012. But times are not good in California anymore, which is to say that 21.9% are unemployed, unemployable, or no longer counted as being among the employable. As a consequence, some now say we should delay the implementation of the Global Warming Act until the economy improves. This Proposition 23 by number leads us to ask, can we end global warming and work the farm?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 703rd edition of the Food Chain Radio Show right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Geneva who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Dave Michaels on the boards. Hello, Dave.
Glad to be here.
Folks, it's the ultimate green machine. We take carbon dioxide from the atmosphere and water and minerals from the earth and through the magic of photosynthesis, turn them into oxygen and food. Now, the business of cooking up oxygen and food is called agriculture. And agriculture, as we know from Michael Olson's first law of the food chain, is the foundation upon which we build all our sandcastles. But to conduct agriculture as on an industrial scale, we must use machinery that runs on hydrocarbons, the burning of which releases carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, where, some say, the gas promotes global warming. Now, to reduce global warming, the state of California has passed the Global Warming Act of 2006, which dictates a mandatory reduction in carbon dioxide emissions beginning in 2012. But wait, the easy times of 2006 have become the hard times of 2010, and total unemployment in California is now reported to be in the range of 22%. And the Global Warming Act may eliminate an additional 1.1 million jobs from California alone. Thus, a new proposition is being put forth, 23 by number, that suggests California delay the implementation of its Global Warming Act until the state's unemployment is reduced to 5%. California's Proposition 23 leads us to ask, can we end global warming and work the farm? Here to help us smoke out an answer, today we have the yeses and noes of California Proposition 23. In alphabetical order, we'll start with Renata Brillinger. Renata, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you, Michael. Glad to be here.
Pleasure to have you aboard. Now, you're a no on 23.
That's right.
Now, what do you do when you're not knowing on 23?
Well, most of my time is not spent knowing on 23. I want to be clear about that. That's something we've been focusing on necessarily in the very short term, but I work with a coalition of organizations, primarily sustainable and organic farming organizations with large numbers of farmer members. It's called the California Climate and Agriculture Network. And our role in the climate debate, is not just about Prop 23, but more generally, is to bring the voices of farmers, particularly those on small family farms, those doing organic production, to the table of climate policy in California to make sure that their contributions get acknowledged and looked at, and also that their need for support in adapting to climate change is addressed.
Fair enough. We always ask who pays the way. So who's paying to defeat Proposition 23 in California?
Well, let me first answer who pays. For our work, we're a nonprofit, so we're primarily funded by a number of private foundations. They have not been supporting our work on Prop 23. So I'm not directly part of the Prop 23, inside circle. Mm-hmm. But in looking at some of their campaign contributions, they are pretty diverse. Some of the biggest donors have come from the from investors in renewables, from solar companies, environmental organizations, you know, the large ones, and private philanthropists.
Fair enough. Let's go to our other guest, Anita Mangles. Anita, welcome to the Food Chain.
Good morning, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure to have you aboard. Well, I ask the same thing of you. What do you do when you're not yesing on 23?
Yeah, I'm a public affairs consultant, and I spend a lot of time working on energy issues as well as public policy issues that impact taxpayers, small businesses, and the state's economy.
Okay, good. And who is paying to promote the yes vote on Proposition 23? To hold the implementation of California's Global Warming Act until the economy recovers a little bit. Who's paying to pass that that hold on the implementation?
Our primary support comes from energy companies, many of whom have facilities and employees in California. And we're also supported, and this is important, and I'm sure Renata would agree, a lot of times, you know, you see money behind policy initiatives, but you also see a lot of folks who can't afford to put in the big dollars but still are very interested in the cause. And folks like Renata, who was out there volunteering and working on getting things done. We're proud to have the support of the California Farm Bureau Federation, the California Dairy Campaign, the California Citrus Mutual, many local farm bureaus, the Nisei Farmers League, the Regional Council of Rural Counties, Western United Dairymen. You know, clearly, the agriculture industry is very interested in preserving the economy and making it easier to stay in business and produce food here in California.
Okay, it sounds like we have two California agricultures, one on each side of this issue. Would that be a fair summation, Renata?
I think we have many more than two. It's a very pluralistic environment in California agriculture. There are 400 crops.
And with respect to who you represent, you know, it sounds like you're representing one side of California agriculture, and Anita is representing another.
If we have to be polar about it, I think there are a great number that have sort of sat it out, too, so there might be a third category.
Well, I will be one. So if you guys can convince me today how to vote on this. It's a very interesting one, not only for California, but for the rest of the country as well.
Mm-hmm.
How do we come to grips with global warming and keep our jobs? That is a huge question and being played out in big numbers here in California. So first question I have today is, why did California pass the Global Warming Act of 2006? Renata?
Well, again, I wasn't close to the action at the time, but it was a bipartisan effort on the part of the legislature in California. It was an effort led by Governor Schwarzenegger. He continues to champion it to this day, has been one of the most outspoken defenders of AB 32 and opponents of Prop 23. So it was, at the time, you know, a very popular thing to do, not to say there wasn't debate, not to say there doesn't continue to be debate as the rules get put in place. But I think at the time and now, the polls show us that a vast majority of Californians support and understand the need to move forward and deal in a comprehensive way with climate change.
So we're trying to reduce climate change or climate global warming or whatever it's called these days, right?
And also really incentivize the shift to clean energy, green energy, renewables.
Okay. Anita?
Well, you know, Renata's got a lot of it right. We probably agree on more than we disagree on. Clearly, Californians believe that we should do something about global warming, and the coalition behind Yes on 23 feels the same. The issue becomes a couple of things. First of all, as you mentioned, Michael, when the global warming law was passed back in 2006, unemployment was only 4.8%, and the economy, not only California-wide but worldwide, was in a lot better shape. And there was a lot of action globally to address what is admittedly a global problem, you know, climate change. In those intervening years, the economy has changed dramatically. We have 2.2 million people out of work in California. In many of the agricultural areas, unemployment is in the 30 to 40% range, which is devastating for the industry. You take a look at what's been going on. Most of the other governments on the planet have moderated their approach to climate change.
Well, did anybody else follow California's lead?
There were some fits and starts. There's a group called the Western Climate Initiative, some neighboring states to California, that said, yes, we're going to form a partnership and move forward together regionally with climate change policy.
Mm-hmm.
And all but all of those states other than New Mexico have completely backed off of cap and trade, which is the largest plank in the whole platform of climate change policy, because they've recognized that it will hurt their economies. New Mexico is looking at it, but they've come out and said, you know what, if it's going to hurt us economically, if no one else is doing it, we're not going to do it either.
Renata, we got anybody else following our lead here?
Well, there's a little bit of sleight of hand going on here. That they haven't all backed out of the Western Climate Initiative or attempts to deal with.
Okay, can you hold that? We're going to have to take a quick break, and we'll come back to you, and you can follow up on
great.
That. And the question today, folks, can we end global warming and work the farm at the same time? You're invited to participate. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. This is The Food Chain. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with Renata Brillinger, no on 23, Anita Mangles, yes on 23, and you, what are you? Right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, when times were good, Californians passed the Global Warming Act of 2006 to help fight global warming. But times are not so good in California anymore, with unemployment or underemployment or non-employment reaching 21.9%. And so some say, well, perhaps we should delay the implementation of that Global Warming Act, which would reduce our carbon emissions by, or CO2 emissions by somewhere in the neighborhood of 30%, give or take, by 2020. And that's a reduction in our ability to go about doing business by 30%, or so it would seem, because hydrocarbons are essentially how we go about doing business. So if such is the case, should we or should we not delay implementation of this act? That is the question on the table today with Renata Brillinger of No on Proposition 23. She says we should allow for that implementation and go forward. Anita Mangles, yes on 23, says we should delay the implementation. What say you? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Renata, it seems like you suggest that perhaps other states are in this with us. True?
Yeah, I mean, AB 32 is just a policy tool, you know, for driving the private sector, businesses, and so on in a certain direction. And when you look at the results of that policy tool, it's hard to compare it to other states, other countries. There are other countries that are using different policy tools. They've had different successes. California has always been a leader, both in renewable energy, in sustainable and organic agriculture.
Who's with us? Who's with California?
It depends what yardstick you use. If you look at this, making the transition to renewable energy, to clean and green energy, we've got countries, China, Europe, Canada, that are far, far ahead of us. California is a leader within the United States. There's no question about that, and that's something that Prop 23 would effectively chill to a great extent. But in the last since AB 32 was passed 4 years ago, there's been about $10 billion. Invested in venture capital in the green energy sector. That's a huge opportunity. Mm-hmm. There's been 500,000 jobs created. That sector has grown 10 times faster.
I'd like to pick that up here in a little while, but I'd like to ask one question, kind of follow up this basic theme here with respect to California. Can California have an impact on global warming by reducing its emissions of reducing its emissions of CO2?
Every large entity that takes a move on climate change has matters.
Okay. Anita?
Okay. Actually, here's what the California Air Resources Board has to say about this. California Air Resources Board, and I quote, California acting alone cannot reduce emissions sufficiently to change the course of climate change worldwide. And regardless of some of the symbolic actions that other places are taking, the California legislative analyst has said that California's global warming policy is so much more aggressive than anywhere else in the world that we are going to be losing jobs, economic activity, and revenues to other places that don't have laws this stringent. And one of the side effects of that is, ironically, that we will be exporting pollution. You know, Renata mentioned China. China's building a new coal-fired powered plant just about every day. They're beginning to surpass us in food production over in China. You know, I know a lot has been made about the need to reduce our dependence on foreign energy sources, but we also need to look at the fact that a lot of our food production is also going outside
of
the United States.
Okay, let's back up. Before we go into that, let's back up just one little notch so we can lead the audience into this. With respect to agriculture, what impact will California's Global Warming Act have on agriculture? I mean, we're going to reduce our emissions of CO2, but what impact will that have on our ability to grow food here in California, Renata?
Well, agriculture isn't directly regulated under AB 32. In other words, farmers aren't going to be capped, you know, under a cap-and-trade system. They're not going to have to do any reporting. There's very little about AB 32 that directly regulates them. There is...
What is the Farm Bureau... Why is the Farm Bureau voting for delaying the implementation then?
I haven't heard a direct answer. They haven't been very vocal on this issue, though...
Well, let's ask Anita. Anita, why is the Farm Bureau, if it doesn't affect agriculture, why is the Farm Bureau, encouraging us to delay the implementation of this act?
Well, agriculture is going to be one of the most heavily impacted sectors of our economy that's impacted by this global warming law. You know, agriculture is very, very energy intensive. It takes energy to grow the crops. It takes energy to process the crops into the food that comes to our tables. And it takes a lot of energy to transport the crops to the market. We're looking at regulated entities. By the way, it's not true that they don't have to report. Dairy farms have to report. Large farms have to report. Food processing facilities
on the large.
Have to report.
These are massive operations, and there are very few of them.
Let's go back to what the real world impact is. Large is important because large is where most of the food that we eat comes from. I mean, you also find family farmers that are very, very upset. Take the Nisei Farmers League. Local family farmers and ranchers, they're looking at increases in electricity costs of up to 60%. They're looking at natural gas cost increases of up to 57%. They're looking at rules where they would have to retrofit their farming equipment that will be very, very expensive for them to afford. At a time, again, when unemployment in the agricultural sector goes up as high as 40%, and very, very importantly, again, as the Air Resources Board has said, and which also the U.S. EPA has said, California acting alone can't do anything to reduce global warming. So what we'd be doing is imposing effectively a multi-billion-dollar energy tax on family farmers and ranchers, and yes, on the larger producers as well.
Well, wait a minute. It wouldn't be imposing it on them. It would be imposing it on the people who buy the products that they consume, that they produce, right?
Well, every step of the food chain, pardon the expression, picks up another layer of the cost. So if you have the energy producers, the transportation sector, et cetera, having to bear these prices, they're going to pass them along to the farmers and ranchers. They're going to pass them along with everybody else, the canners, the labelers,
okay, so
et
the question then becomes...
So it's like a rolling stone down the hill, gathering moss as it goes.
Yeah, so the question then becomes, will consumers pay for the extra costs of that global warming legislation or restrictions, or will they go to the box store and purchase made-in-China food?
Probably the latter when they can get it.
Renata?
I don't think anybody can say that with any kind of certainty. I just wanted to go back and ask listeners to be careful as they listen to some of the numbers that get thrown out. I think a key question, like you asked in the beginning, Michael, is where does the money come for, mm-hmm. and where do those numbers come from? So for every report that the oil companies have commissioned to validate their business interests, there are other reports that have been done by independent economists that show different results.
You know, as a journalist, I've come to force myself not to believe anybody, especially those with whom I agree. Fair enough.
So whenever
anybody quotes me any kind of number,
right,
like are being bandied about with respect to global warming, which is such a hard thing to get our hands on, it's just mind-boggling.
It's very complex.
Very, very complex and hard to come to grips with. But my question still...
Yeah, I wanted to try to get a bit more specific answer to that question, to your invitation
sure.
to me to respond to that. I think what we're, you know, instead of bantering around, you know, competing reports and having to really use those, you really have to delve into who funded them and what were the assumptions. And, you know, it's very complicated, and economists don't even agree. What I think we're talking about here, and this is important for farmers who, as Anita points out, are big energy users, what's our energy future going to look like here in California? That's really what this is, in some ways, a referendum about.
Mm-hmm.
I would posit that we're deciding between staying in a fossil fuel dependent economy that the oil companies are trying to protect, and that makes sense for their interests and their shareholders. I understand why that's important to them.
But it's important to all of us.
It's important to all of us.
Because that's how we eat our food.
That's right. You know? And these oil companies, to be clear, are primarily funding this measure, are primarily not located in California. So of course they're interested because they sell oil here. But they're not interested, though they would lead you to believe it, in the state of the economy here.
Okay, Renata, I'm going to pin you to that question when I get back. Will consumers pay the extra cost? Folks, this is The Food Chain, Michael Olson, with Renata Brillinger, no on 23, Anita Mangles, yes on 23, and you. We're going to go to the phones when we get back, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Can we end global warming and work the farm? California has made a commitment to fight global warming, and it did so in 2006 by voting in the Global Warming Act, which will necessitate a pretty substantial reduction in the emissions of our CO2 here in California, in the Golden State. But, of course, that comes at a cost, and that cost means that it's going to cost a lot more to grow food and to distribute food and to process it, and the whole food chain is going to be a lot more expensive. And so that when we go to the supermarket, foods from California are simply going to cost more. So the question is, will consumers honor California's commitment to fight global warming by paying the additional costs, or will those consumers look at these extra costs and say, to heck with it, and they go to the big box store and buy their made in China for a lot, lot less money? So that's really an important question, because when they go to that box store and buy that stuff from China, essentially what we're doing is moving the dirt from our agriculture to the dirt of their agriculture. It might make us feel better, but are we ending global pollution or global warming by doing so? Renata Brillinger, are those consumers going to honor that commitment to reduce global warming by paying the extra cost?
Well, I think the assumption has to be questioned that those costs are going to go up. I would invite people to remember a couple of years ago when we had a $5 a gallon fuel price at the pumps. If we just look at what it's going to cost to deal with global warming and to incentivize renewables, and not compare that to what the risks are of staying dependent on foreign fuels, foreign oil, we're not serving ourselves. We're not actually getting the whole picture. If we forget that oil price shocks happen and that those are incredibly expensive for farmers, for average citizens, then we're not doing ourselves any favor. If we continue to externalize the costs of that oil addiction, the environmental degradation costs, the public health costs, we haven't even talked about those effects, that those benefits of moving forward with a clean energy future.
Okay.
You know, the picture looks a little different, and the cost benefit analysis has to, you know, would necessarily shift.
All right, let's go to Anita. I'll ask you the same question. Are consumers going to honor California's commitment to fight global warming by paying the additional costs, or are they going to go buy made in China?
Well, certainly they're not going to have a choice in a lot of what they pay, because their electricity bills will go up, their natural gas bills will go up, the cost of just about everything they buy and use will go up. And those studies, by the way, don't come from you know, from industry. They come from the Air Resources Board, the 57% increase in natural gas from the Air Board, the 60% electricity cost from the Southern California Public Power Authority.
So it's not just food, it's a whole
it's
thing.
It's everything, but of course, as Renata and I agree, they, you know, agriculture is very energy intensive. Mm-hmm. Let's get back, though, to all the other things that Renata threw out. You know, she's gotten far afield from the fact that the global warming law was written, and it wasn't passed, by the way, by California voters. It was the legislature. The voters had nothing to do with it. They can have a say in how it's implemented, which is very important next week. But we already have laws that are getting us a diversified energy portfolio. We already have laws that are reducing mobile source emissions, the diesel emissions that can actually impact public health. The global warming law was written just to reduce global warming. But even if it's suspended, and this is also very important for listeners to know, we still have laws on the books that will continue to achieve the greenhouse gas reductions required under that law because they were passed under separate legislation. So here are some examples of the things that will remain untouched that are moving us to exactly the diversified energy portfolio that Renata's talking about. We have the California Solar Emission Initiative, or Solar Energy Initiative. But we have zero emission vehicle regulation.
Just a minute. Let me ask both of you one simple question. And I'll start with you, Renata. If you go into a store and see a rutabaga for $1 and a rutabaga for $2, and the rutabaga for $2 comes from California, and the rutabaga for $1 comes from who knows where, are you going to buy the $2 rutabaga?
Are you asking me personally, or
yeah,
maybe
personally?
Well, me personally, I put a high value, and I have enough discretion, and because I'm lucky and I know a lot about food production.
Mm-hmm.
I put a high value on food and health and the externalized cost of that, of where that,
So you're going to pay the extra buck.
It depends on why it's being charged extra.
Anita?
Most folks don't have that luxury. And it's kind of interesting. That's why we see on the no side of Prop 23, you see literally a single billionaire hedge fund manager had the money to put $5 million into defeating this initiative that would save the regular folk all this money in their energy bills. You know, it's one thing to sit in a mansion in Palo Alto or in Beverly Hills or wherever you are and say, yeah, I'm going to pay an extra dollar for my food here and there. Other folks, the 2.2 million unemployed, the folks who are among those in the highest foreclosure rate in the United States, literally, they're worrying about whether they can even feed their families at all, not whether or not they have the luxury to pay more for organic produce or produce that has a carbon fee attached to it.
Okay.
So we have to be very, very sensitive.
So does that mean
to
you're going
to
pay the extra
economy
dollar or not, Anita?
I personally I can, but but I don't want to impose the values that are.
So you're saying you would pay the extra dollar.
I pay for value.
Okay.
And if I believe that
you're starting to sound
food,
like Renata.
No, if I believe, for example, that organic food is a better way for me to go, of course I'm going to buy it. I don't need a law to force me to buy it. It's available and it's a growing sector. And that's something I think that is missed in this argument. We have got, and Renata mentioned this earlier, we've got green tech growing here in California. And it's been growing long before we had this global warming law, and it will continue to grow. Not in small part because, number one, there is a market for it, but number two, we have all these other laws that are encouraging and incentivizing it. We pay billions of dollars in subsidies, for example, for solar energy.
Okay.
Solar gets $24 per kilowatt hour, while natural gas only gets 25 cents.
Let's go see what our callers have to say. And the phone number is 800-624-2665. Michael Olson, this is The Food Chain. Renata Brielinger, no on 23. And Anita Mangles, yes on 23. What say you? Mike, go ahead.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Mike, thanks for having me on.
You bet.
I work in agribusiness, establishing supply chains for various conversion facilities, whether it's bioenergy, transportation fuel, plastics, or chemicals. And there is a surge in demand for productive farmland and even, subpar farmland to produce renewable ingredients all across the board. There are five sectors
mm-hmm.
that can use above ground resources. That is, fuel or ingredients produced, on farmland. It's food, fuel, power, plastics, and chemicals. The research and the intensive effort being put towards figuring out economical ways to make, you know, all land more productive is incredible. And so I would say that not only are we going to save the farm, but we can have a drastic or dramatic effect on greenhouse gas reduction.
So do you think we should delay the implementation, or do you think we should go ahead with the implementation of our reduction of carbon dioxide?
No, we need to go ahead and do it. We need to strive for greenhouse gas reduction.
Okay, Mike says, continue. Thank you, Mike. You got to take a quick break, but thank you so much for the calling. Folks, phone numbers today, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Whole bunch of people want to talk, and we're going to let them. When we return, On the Food Chain, right back. Well, when times were good, California elected to fight global warming by passing the Global Warming Act of 2006. But times are not so good anymore, with unemployment hovering somewhere in the stratospheric 22% range. Those who are unemployed, no longer seeking employment or just digging in garbage cans, I guess. So some say we should delay the implementation of this act, and until we pull ourselves together and get some business going again. What say you? This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, Renata Brillinger, No on 23, Anita Mangels, Yes on 23. Guess this is just as important for those of us who live outside of California as it is in California, because it really portends our future. And California grows a lot of food, so let's pick up some phone callers here and see what people have to say. Let's go to Philip. Philip, welcome to The Food Chain.
Hi.
Hi.
There have been a lot of changes since 2006 besides the sabotaging or destruction of the economy and the high unemployment. And one of the major changes is climate gate, the fact that all the evidence or most of the evidence that supports global warming is shown to be a fraud. There are excellent scientists that are abandoning the whole movement. So the basic premise that there is global warming and that there's anything that needs to be fixed, I think, is in question. And it doesn't seem to even be a factor in the discussion.
Well,
the fact,
you know,
that billionaire hedge fund people are funding the effort to defeat this proposition, to me this shows that if you follow the money, that's where it's at. It's about billionaires making money off the poor.
You know, I'm much more inclined to follow the money than to follow the statistics, just by virtue of the fact that I don't believe anybody, especially those with whom I agree. But when you follow the money, you kind of get an idea of what's what. So, and that's why we asked our guests, you know, who is funding this. So, Philip, what do you think? Would you vote to delay the implementation of this, or do you think we should forge ahead?
So, I would not only vote to delay the implementation of it, I would vote to kill this effort to impoverish the common man altogether.
Thank you very much.
I don't think there is global warming.
Okay, so we are one in one. Thank you very much for the call, Philip.
Can I chime in on that, Michael?
Please do.
Just wanted to say, to be clear, this is an effective end to the whole AB 32 pathway. It basically does kill it. I just want to be clear about that. It says that we'll freeze it until unemployment reaches 5.5%, which it hasn't done more than three times in 30-plus years. So it is killing it. It is a complete freeze. It's a complete stoppage in our progress towards clean energy, clean air, and dealing with this very real problem.
Okay, let's go quickly to Rory. Rory, welcome to The Food Chain. Always good to have our farmer Rory aboard. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. You put me in the column with Philip, Yes on 23.
Mm-hmm. Which means that you want to delay the implementation of the Global Warming Act.
Oh, I want to delay. I want to kill it. This belief in anthropogenic or man-made global warming is sheer madness at this point. And I'd like to ask your guest, Renata, is it?
Yes, Renata Brillinger.
Renata, what are you from California originally?
Did I grow up here?
I've
only been here 20 years.
Where were you born and raised?
How is that relevant to our conversation?
Well, you were getting on the oil companies being from Texas and out of state. I'd like to know where you're from. It's very relevant.
That's interesting.
Well, no, is it silence? I mean, come on, Renata.
I'm just wondering why it's worth our valuable time to talk about that.
I'm a listener to the show, and I'm asking a question.
Well, just tell her why it's important, and then we'll go from there.
It's important, Renata, because you brought up the fact that maybe some of the funding for Prop 23 is coming from out-of-state oil companies. I'd just like to know where you're from. It's a legitimate question.
Well, I'm Canadian, if that's relevant. I just really don't see the relevance. One of the big differences is I'm volunteering on this effort, and the oil companies are protecting their business interests. I'm concerned about the welfare of Californians and Canadians and Americans and the entire planet.
Wonderful, Renata. Let's see, fourth generation in California, and I'm a little more concerned about California than you are.
Hold on a minute. You
threw out some stuff like China's on the leading edge of clean energy, and they're bringing on a coal-fired power plant one a week. I mean, come on. Where are you getting these numbers? I mean, this is insane. And it is, Michael, you're right. It is going to hurt the average person.
Everybody's going to have to pay the cost.
May I jump in, Michael?
Okay, go ahead.
You know, everybody's going to pay the cost, and what's really unfortunate is that everybody in California is going to have to pay by leaps and bounds much more than anyone else is going to have to pay, because we're the only place that's doing it, regardless of the cosmetic motions that some other places like China are making. You hit it on the head, or our caller did.
Rory did.
They're building coal fire plants, you know, as quickly as they can possibly put them up. They don't have the environmental protection laws that we have in California. So the legislative analyst, again, has said that because California's policy is so much more aggressive than anywhere else, we will continue to lose jobs, we will continue to lose revenues, we will continue to export our pollution.
And
while
you're
not
only
doing
quoting
anything
some,
at all to reduce global warming.
You're only quoting some of the LAO study. The LAO also says that there is a good chance that not moving forward on this bill will have there's significant debate, considerable uncertainty. It will have negative impacts in the long run. It will delay investments in clean energy. That's also in that report, and I think you should be fair and not just cherry pick.
Let's go to Mary really quickly. Mary, go ahead.
Michael, listen, we should just get this all over with. The U.S. is almost bankrupt anyway. China and other nations are running the world. We no longer are a leading power. I think we should just throw out local ag and farming with the bathwater, get it over with, and then rebuild, because that's exactly where we're heading. We're a bunch of people in this nation with our heads in the sand.
So we have
to look at is what's happening.
So, Mary, are you going to...
Go green. Who owns the green industry? They're building the solar panels cheaper, the windmills cheaper. Everybody believes those organic vegetables.
Okay, I have to take a quick break. Right back. Go, Mary, go. Thank you very much. Right back on the Food Chain. Do stay tuned.
Get that.
Well, what say you out there? Should we delay the implementation of California's global warming initiative, reduce our emissions of CO2 by up to 30%? Or should we kind of like delay this until we have a job or two in California? So much to talk about, so little time to do it. Let's go quickly to Russ. Russ, what say you?
I say that we should delay.
Delay? Why is that?
Well, I'm a manufacturer's agent. I started in 1971. We had lots of manufacturing. We have very, very little manufacturing in the state anymore. They talk about global warming and how this is going to make all these jobs, but we're not making anything here anymore. We install it, but in order to install it, we've got to have people making money. We're more and more people can't make money in California. Looking at equipment, perhaps nobody's aware of the fact that one of the things that's happening now is all of the construction equipment, which would include farm equipment, we're shipping it to China because we're forcing all of our contractors and our farmers to buy all new diesel equipment.
So we're giving the dirty equipment to China. Is that what you're saying?
We're shipping all of our good equipment, but it doesn't happen to meet the newest, greatest, most wonderful rules in California. It's being shipped out wholesale.
Okay, Russ.
And
Russ votes to delay implementation. Let's go to Nick. Nick, what say you?
Yeah, the global warming is a complete hoax. The reason why the Copenhagen cap and trade agreements, one of the reasons why it fell through, because it was real from East Anglia University in England, who were keeping the records on all this, that they've been doctoring the records to make it look like it was warming for, since 1998, when in fact it was cooling.
Okay, so
this has all come out now. In fact, in Spain, for every one green job they created in the private sector and energy, they lost three. That's a fact.
There you go. So, okay, thank you, Nick. Tom, what do you say?
Hello?
Hello, what do you say?
Well, I'm for delaying it. Actually, I would like to see it completely eliminated.
Okay.
There is technology that is available, needs to be developed, that makes the entire question of global warming moot.
Okay.
Lifter nuclear reactor technology.
Okay, I'm going to have to move on really quickly. Okay. Tom votes delay. Rich, what do you say really? Rich, what do you say really quickly?
Yeah, hi. I said delay it too because there's a good book out now, but by ice you need to read it. It's all about our global cooling, and we had global cooling back in the 70s, and now we're in the global warming. They keep switching it.
Things go
around.
It's
all about money.
Okay, thank you very much, Rich. Renata, Anita, can we reduce global warming and work the farm, Renata?
Absolutely. The whole question about whether we can have economic vitality and environmental sustainability has to really be grappled with. I think this is a false choice that we can't have both. We absolutely can. We have to be smart. We have to be innovative. We have to take leadership. We should not capitulate to the fear that these Texas oil companies are putting us to keep us back. And
Renata
really
says yes. What does Anita say?
We can't do it unless we do it alone with the rest of the world, and right now California is acting alone. Here's a fact. California's carbon footprint has been reduced dramatically since the global warming law was passed in 2006, not because of new regulations, which haven't yet kicked in, but because our economy has gone progressively downhill.
And
the quickest way to reduce the carbon footprint is to not have productivity. With the global warming law, it's going to get even worse. And, you know, it won't be because of the laws. It'll be because there's no one left
here. Okay, thank you very much, both of you, for joining us today. Wish we had more time. We don't. Love you both. This has been The Food Chain. Michael Lolson with Renata Brillinger, Anita Mangel, and you. Thank you all so much for tuning in.
Been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.